When I was a kid growing up in the United Methodist Church, the communion went around. We actually took it in the pews. They had the plates and the little cups. My mom says that when they passed it, I said, if you get an olive in yours, can I have it? That's a true story. People take communion many different ways, actually. There's intinction, and there's the very formal table, and there's sometimes on the street side. And there's different words, but the meaning of communion is always the same. And when I was a kid taking communion in the United Methodist Church, I wasn't allowed to take communion until I was confirmed, because the thought was that you shouldn't take communion until you fully understand what it means. And that's the way it is with some churches. But times have continued on to the thought where it is a holy mystery, and are we ever able to fully comprehend the mystery that is communion? So now more and more we see children coming to the table, which I dearly welcome. I think it's wonderful, because communion is a community of us gathered around the table, and frankly, I don't know if the disciples even fully understood what was happening, only that Jesus deeply loved them. So there was a time when a little girl had asked her mommy, why, when we have pot roast, why do you cut the ends off the meat before you cook it? And the mother told her that she thought that maybe it was because it added flavor to the meat to better absorb the spices. But she did tell the little girl, why don't you ask your grandmother, because I started doing it because she did it. So the little girl found her grandmother, and she said, Grandma, why do you and Mommy cut the ends off the meat before you cook it? And her grandmother thought a moment, and she said, well, I think it's because it allows the meat to stay more tender during the cooking process, because it soaks up the juices. But I'm not really sure. I do it because your great-grandma did it. So the little girl found her great-grandma, and she said, why do Mommy and Grandma and you cut the ends off the meat before you cook it? And the great-grandmother said, because the pot was too big. We do a lot of things in life, and we seldom ask why. We just do it because that's the way it's always been done. We develop habits and traditions. And if we're not careful, we can forget why we do certain things. In 2004, the United Methodist Church made a startling discovery. After a survey of parishioners all around the world in the Global Connection, it was discovered that people were very hungry for communion. People were hungry for the deep spiritual meaning and the life-changing holiness offered through God's grace, through the bread and the cup. And they ached to have something supernatural happen when they tasted the bread and put the cup to their lips. They were tired of going through the motions, and they were seeking the true meaning behind what the mystery was and why they were doing what they were doing. So through a long process, the Book of Resolutions and the Book of Discipline, it was determined that bishops, district superintendents, and other annual conference and general conference authorities would be urged to prepare pastors to better tell people and hold them accountable for the theological practice of communion. That's a lot of language for helping people understand what communion means. And I think before we can fully understand the communion ritual that happened during the Last Supper, we must first understand the Passover. And that's the meal that Jesus ate with his disciples on that night that he was betrayed. So when Christ decided to gather his disciples for that meal in the upper room, it's not like he said, "Come on, everybody, let's get together for communion." Because there wasn't communion at that time. Or "let's have a Last Supper." He didn't say that either. Or Eucharist. That was not a term yet either. Jesus said that he earnestly desired to celebrate the Passover with his disciples before he was to suffer. And that night, he took all of the ancient religious symbolism and he shed a new light on it. The Passover celebrated what God had done for the Jews in releasing them from Egyptian captivity. Way, 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 way back then. The Passover celebrated that Jesus celebrated with his disciples, took that symbolism and took it a step further. It created a new ritual for us, which we celebrate God's releasing us from the captivity of sin. And since we traditionally don't celebrate the annual Passover or Seder meal, it makes sense that we're really not acclimated to its symbolism. If you grew up Jewish, then you understand all the elements of the Passover meal. So I'll give you an overview. So the Passover meal, the special meal, was celebrated during Jesus' time and is still celebrated by the Jewish community. And we know that for anything to learn, when we use all of our senses, our touch and our hearing and our taste and our smell and our eyes, when we use all of our senses together, the message becomes more vivid. Hands-on learning, right? It moves deeper from memory into heart. So this is how it went. Before the beginning of the Passover, all of the leaven, which makes the bread rise, which is a symbol of sin, was removed from the Jewish home. And the house was cleaned from top to bottom. And once the leaven is removed, the family sits around the table and ceremonially washes their hands. And they do this with a special laver and towel. And Jesus also took part in this tradition, only instead of washing his hands, he washed his disciples' feet. And this gives us an unparalleled lesson in humility. When the house and the participants are ceremonially clean, the Passover Seder can begin. The woman of the house says a blessing, and then the candles are lit. And then the Haggadah. This is the telling of the story of Passover using symbols and objects. And afterwards, the cups of wine are given thanks over and blessed. Back in those days, we've kind of lost the tradition, but stories were passed on from one generation to the next through telling stories. So the meal is continued with each article on the table, the plates, the cups, the food, everything symbolizes God's acts of mercy in freeing the Jewish slaves from captivity. There's symbolism for blood, tears, and the rushed departure. They're all symbolized through food and are tasted and experienced by each person. As each is instructed to feel as if they themselves were there that night. And by eating and drinking the elements, it's a way for us also to experience what the meaning is and make it a part of us. And in every Jewish home, on every single Seder plate is a bare shank bone of a lamb. In the book of Exodus, the Jewish slaves were told to apply the blood of an innocent lamb on their doorposts so the angel of death would pass over. That's where we get the term, would pass over them. In similar fashion, the angel of death passes over us because Jesus' blood is pure and spotless. So even though our bodies die, we don't. Our essence, our spirit, our actual being continues to live. So we symbolically apply his blood to the doorposts of our hearts, and we're spared. And when we depart from this earth, we find that we're not dead at all, but we're alive, and we're living in pure joy, in paradise, in peace. As John the Baptist said when he saw Jesus coming towards him, "Behold, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sins of the world." So after the meal is finished, the leader of the Seder lets the children loose to hunt for the afikomen, which is wrapped in a napkin and hidden before the meal. So all the children are looking for the afikomen, and the house is in a ruckus as everyone rushes to be the first child to find the afikomen. And once it is found, the leader breaks it up into the pieces for each person and distributes a piece of it to everyone who is seated around the table. The tradition, perhaps, dates back to the time of Jesus. If this is the case, then Luke 22:19 takes on a greater meaning. "And he took bread, and he gave thanks, and he broke it. And he gave it to them, saying, 'This is my body, given for you. Do this in remembrance of me.'" For Jesus, the Messiah, would have taken the middle one of the pieces of the matzah, the piece that stood for the priest or the mediator between God and the people, and broken it as his body would have been broken, wrapped in half a linen napkin as it would be wrapped in a linen for burial, and hidden as he would be buried in the tomb, and then brought back to the table as he was brought back and resurrected, and distributed to everyone who was seated with him as he would distribute his life to all who believe. And as he did this, he was conscious that this middle piece of matzah represented his own spotless body, given for the redemption of his people. In the Seder meal, there are four cups of wine that are blessed. And each one, again, represents something different. The third cup of wine is taken after the meal, And it's the cup of redemption. And in the same way, we know that in the communion that we celebrate, after the supper, Jesus took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant of my blood, which is shed for you. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me." This wasn't just any cup. This was the third cup. It was the cup of redemption from slavery into freedom. And this is our communion cup. This is the cup that we drink from. And when Jesus gathered his disciples for that final meal, he knew what was coming. I imagine that must have been hard to face. And in typical Jesus fashion, he used illustrations, things around them to help them understand. But what he also did that night was something for us. Because he knew you. He knew me. He knew all of us that night. And what he did was create a way for you and I to remember, to participate in this story, and to be there present with him. And so we get to take it in, all of us, our own release from captivity to sin and death through Jesus Christ. And today we celebrate World Communion Sunday. So we're cognizant that not only we here in this room are celebrating this very sacred experience, but that we are celebrating it with Christians around the globe. We're celebrating with those down the street. We're celebrating with those who live in the South and the North. We're celebrating with Asian believers and with those in Africa and with those on all sorts of different corners of the earth. We're celebrating with those who have to hide underground and be very secretive for fear of death. And we remember that we are all one. When one of the body hurts, the whole body hurts. Jason was just telling me this morning that that he is getting over a cold, and right now it's the head cold. And I know that when I have a head cold and I'm stuffed up, it affects everything. It's not just your head hurting, and everything else goes along happily. When our body hurts, all of us hurt. And when a part of our body celebrates, we all celebrate. We are one connection. So as you partake today when we have communion, remember these things. Remember that Jesus is here with us. Remember that somebody's going to steal my job. Remember that we are one family and that we love one another. And remember that the generations after us, long after we are gone, will be present with us as we are with them in this holy sacrament. Amen.